Let's get to our guest. Raymond Yung is with us, Chief Greater China Economist at ANZ, joining from Hong Kong. Thanks for being with us, Raymond. Let's begin with the inflation data for China. This factory gate price data remains in kind of deflationary territory. And I'm curious, yeah, it's maybe can be explained away with a lot of what's been happening in the overall economy on the mainland, given the COVID restrictions. But we know now there's been an abrupt shift. Would you think that this narrative on factory gate prices begins to change pretty abruptly?
I think that the PPI will continue to add to deflation, not only because of the domestic situation in China, even though that we know that COVID easing will help some domestic travel or passenger travel to some extent, but globally, you know, the energy price doesn't seem to be picking up. So I think on the headline perspective, it's just an active 1.3% year on year, but on month basis, pretty stable at the moment. The latest data we know is just 0.1% positive. I believe that if the global recession really come in play, then probably the PPI will stay negative for a while before a full-fledged recovery of China, especially for international travel from China.
And how about the CPI? As demand snaps back, as restrictions get eased, what's your outlook for inflation in China in 2023?
Well, the easing, local easing might help a bit and support service sector recovery, but our broad view is that China is still faced with a great deflation unless there's a change in expectation, especially for the very poor property outlook and property price been falling. If you look at today's numbers, 1.6% year on year, but actually on a month-on-month basis, sequentially it's been dropping 0.2 percentage points, so it's still on the deflationary mode. I don't see there's any significant uptick next year unless there's a big change and revival of the property sector. The property price has to be stabilized in order to prevent China from falling into a Japanese lost decade.
Raymond, there was a very interesting piece in the Wall Street Journal today in the U.S. Saying that Terry Guo, the founder of Foxconn, reportedly, according to the journal, played a major role in persuading Beijing to accelerate the dismantling of COVID zero. He basically indicated that if these controls were to continue, they would threaten China's central position in global supply chains. And I'm sure other companies in China were expressing the same sentiment. And you know, from the lens on the outside, you see the protest, you're thinking maybe the protesters had an impact on changing the narrative there. But maybe it was China Inc. helping to get Beijing to wake up and to say, look, unless things were to change or do change pretty quickly, I mean, there could be dire consequences for the economy.
Absolutely. I just came back from Taipei last week, spoke to many Taiwanese manufacturers who have significant production facilities in China. Now, Zhengzhou, what happened to Foxconn factory, we all know that's a turning point to the whole easing. And also, to some extent, many of the manufacturers are thinking about expanding or at least diversifying their production site because of the COVID situation. Vietnam and Indonesia, you know, is bound to benefit from this process. But I think that because the supply chain's been well established in China, then some of these global manufacturers and contract manufacturer OEM players, they don't really want to, you know, shift to other countries immediately, so that they it's not surprising that if they lobby with the Chinese government to ease the COVID policy, that's helped the what is happening in the past few days.
Yeah, that's definitely going to help. But then we have to remember, you know, the experience in the rest of the world as reopening has happened. There's been a lot of illness, a lot of absenteeism, and a lot of disruption. So what sort of supply chain upheaval do you anticipate in the nearer term?
Yeah, that's correct. But I think it's the Chinese health authorities yesterday released this, 10 measures actually on Wednesday, but then it got published yesterday. And the line of thought now is that they regard the latest mutation of virus not that deadly, and they accept the fact that, well, perhaps a sick leave for 1 or 2 days and get back to normal, even though some of the restrictions still in place, for example, the quarantine, but then now they change it to home isolation, still required. But this will be less disruptive compared with the first half of the year in Shanghai and also the latest wave happened in Zhengzhou. And I think that policy easing, even with the rising case number, that also may not be counted by the official because people may not report it to the government too, may actually help to smoothen the supply chain disruption and defend this type of risk and distort the global manufacturing activities.
Raymond, I was talking earlier about the report that we had yesterday that Dutch officials are planning new controls on exports of chip-making equipment to China, perhaps to align them in a way that would be more similar to what we have between the U.S. and China right now in terms of restricting Chinese access to high-end technology. And then today, it looks like Xi Jinping, the president, is wrapping up a trip to Saudi Arabia. How do you view China's repositioning of itself as a nation within the world now? I mean, do you think we're going to see a fundamental shift, or are we seeing a fundamental change?
Well, remember that the Belt and Road has been written in the Constitution a couple of years ago as already the line of thought of how Xi Jinping's position in China and the world. Now, of course, it's never be exclusive. China does want to trade with the U.S. China does want to trade with some of the countries that might not be that friendly to some extent. But at the same time, they for the trip to Saudi Arabia is absolutely a for energy security. And now the over the next few years believe that China would like to get closer to many other countries so that they can also diversify it. Their importing portfolio that is critical to the domestic economic development. Remember this headline policy of dual circulations and to prevent the external risk, and China really need to boost the domestic activities as a to offset the external weakness, not to only because of geopolitics, but also because of global recession. So I'm not surprised that they signed a lot of deals and investment and trade with Saudi Arabia with this trip.
China's got a lot of deals and investment with other countries as well, particularly in emerging markets, and debt's really starting to pile up now. Li Keqiang has promised to work with the IMF and other countries on fair and equitable restructuring. But do you see any risks from this growing debt pile?
I think to some extent it depends on how other countries deal with it. And also for domestic debt, that situation, of course, is more to do with whether China can be leveraged and also to engineer some of the ensure to fend some systemic financial risk. So what we're seeing that they have been having this very tough measure to developers locally, and also in terms of the offshore bonds that we've seen some default, you know, in the past few years. I think the policy has to be very gradual, and we look forward to this Central Economic Work Conference that will be coming next week. The focus is obviously will be on the property financing, and let's see how they're going to address the long-term deleveraging from this work conference.
Yep. All right. Raymond Yung, Chief Greater China Economist at ANZ. Thanks so much for joining us on Bloomberg Daybreak Asia.